This Bozeman mayoral and city commission candidate forum was held on Thursday, October 28th, 2021, via Zoom teleconference. We are just getting set up for a candidate forum that is being presented by Bozeman for CEDA. And CEDA is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination. Forum is just getting lined up. This is a Zoom meeting, but we're also airing it, and we will have it on our website after the fact if you want to listen to it later or refer people to it.
Good evening, and welcome for everybody who is hopping on right now. Welcome to our candidate forum for mayor and for city commission being hosted by the Bozeman Task Force. It's really good to see people popping in here and all of our candidates who are here ready to share and the chance to learn about them and from them tonight. All right. So I want to introduce myself. My name is Liana Bertelson, and I am the moderator for the event this evening. I am one of the co-leaders for the Bozeman Task Force. Other co-leaders here on that task force are Carson Taylor, who's running technology, and Jan Strout. We also have Ellie Cornish, who is a part of our task force as well. Ellie is our timekeeper tonight. The Bozeman Task Force is a group that we are advocating for the human rights for women and those most marginalized in our community. And one important component of ensuring those rights is an initiative for cities to eliminate discrimination against women, or in other words, called CEDAW. And alongside us in endorsing this initiative and also in supporting our forum tonight are a number of community organizations, such as Haven, Montana Now, Bridger Care, Bozeman Professional Women, Bozeman United for Racial Justice, the League of Women Voters, to name just a few. At this point, I'm going to ask Jan if she would our land acknowledgement.
Thank you, Liana. Thanks for everyone for being here. We acknowledge the land we are all on today and honor with respect the Indigenous nations on whose traditional homelands our community now stands and whose historical and cultural relationships with the land continues to today. We can all benefit from the Indigenous knowledge to protect and restore their health, culture, and ecosystems on these lands. We ask the spiritual ancestors to forgive our intrusion and humbly ask for their guidance. As of 2016, the National Crime Information Center has reported 5,712 cases of missing American Indian and Alaska Native women and girls, which is vastly underreported. Murder is the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women, according to the Center for Disease Control. The majority of these women's murders are committed by non-Native people on Native-owned land. We ask that these deaths and abuses be recognized by the federal and state governments because this violence profoundly unsettles entire Indigenous communities. Bozeman Cities for CEDAW Task Force commits to advocating an end to these women's and all human rights violations and losses here in our community and elsewhere, standing with Indigenous women, men, and two-spirited peoples as allies to address and prevent all forms of violence. And I am just acknowledging that this was adapted from the MSU Native American Studies Department Head Walter Fleming and MSU Women's Center and ourselves, and to thank the Native Women's Wilderness for these MMIWG two-spirited statistics.
Thank you, Jan. At this point, I want to also just thank the candidates for stepping up and running for a public office. I was also just recently elected to our school board, and so I'm familiar with this process of what it means to put yourself out there, to be a candidate. And so thank you so much for participating in our democracy in this way. It's really wonderful to see people coming forward in Bozeman who want to bring their talents and their skills and help our communities. So thank you very much for running. I'm also going to mention here that a couple of our candidates are only going to be here for just the introductions, and then they'll be bowing out, and that's going to be Chris Brizzolaro and Evan Rainey. So you'll hear from them at the beginning, and then for other reasons, they will need to leave the forum. So we ask that you engage respectfully in this process. And I don't think that needs a description or anything more than that. This is a chance for you to share who you are and we can learn more about you. And we ask that, and the audience too, that we all engage respectfully in this forum tonight. What will happen is every candidate will have a chance to do a 1-minute introduction to introduce themselves and to explain why they're running for office. And then there will be 3 different questions. All the candidates were given 2 questions ahead of time, so they'd have a chance to think about that. And you will have 2 minutes to respond to each of those questions. And then for the 3rd question, there was a choice of 4 questions they could choose from. And they will have 2 minutes to respond to that 3rd question as well. Now, at that point is where we ask you as the audience that you can also ask your questions of the candidates. And we'll do as many rounds of that as we can. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to an audience question from the audience. And then we'll wrap it up with everybody having a 2-minute time frame for a closing statement. Ellie is our timekeeper. She will be flashing cards and letting you know when you see the time, it'll be how much time is left. All right, do you have any questions before we get going? All right. One last thing too is for the audience, as you're listening, at any time, you can drop your questions directly in the chat to Jan. Jan's going to be taking those questions and then selecting a diversity of them at the end for the candidates to respond to. So at any point, you can directly pose those to Jan and she will take those. I also want to thank KGVM for doing the live streaming of this forum. It is also being recorded and it will be posted as a podcast. So just wanted to make sure people understood that too. All right, so we're going to start with the first round, which is a 1-minute introduction. And I'm going to have Chris Brizzolaro. You may go first.
Thank you. My name is Chris Brizzolaro. I'm skipping class right now at MSU. I'm a 29-year-old master's student of architecture, getting my 2nd master's degree in architecture. I can't explain why I'm running for mayor in less than a minute. I think it's unfair to ask me to. So instead, I'm going to send a link right now in the chat. This is an interview that I had a couple days ago with a great comedian and news podcaster named Ron Placone. It went really well and really expressed what I actually want to do as mayor. So please go ahead on that. With the remaining 20 seconds or so that I have, I just want to highlight all the women that are running for city commission this term. First off, Ms. Iho Pomeroy. I'm a huge fan. I love that you're an entrepreneur, and of course I'm going to vote for you. Miss Emily Sparrow, once again, I think you're the strongest person running on the commission. Also, I feel like I've become friends with you along this process, so I wish you the best of luck. And finally, Miss Magic, I got 10 seconds. You're an amazing planner. I really enjoyed meeting you this entire process, and I hope we can be pleasant and see each other around town. Thank you very much, Bozeman. I got to get back to class, and I got to be quiet, so thank you.
Thank you, Chris. All right, Terry Cunningham.
Thank you. I'm running for mayor because I believe in Bozeman and its residents. I believe the true measure of our success shouldn't be how many top 10 lists we're on or how fast we're growing, but how we care for one another, how we treat one another. We're a community where if someone slides off into a ditch, we don't drive by, we stop, we help. I believe we shouldn't see people who are different than ourselves as other. We should say, that's my brother and that's my sister, and I'm invested in their well-being. I believe we have the talent, the inclination, and the resources to tackle our most challenging community problems, but only when we work together towards common goals. As mayor, I'll work to engender that spirit of community cooperation, compassion, and connection. I'll work to ensure that Bozeman takes an honest look at itself and breaks down barriers so we can all feel safe and accepted, so we can all thrive. I believe in Bozeman, I believe in us, and I thank the task force for the opportunity tonight.
Thank you, Terry. And now we're gonna go to Brian Lemires.
Okay, Thank you, and good evening, everybody, and thank you all for this opportunity. I am Brian Lemires, one of your mayor candidates. I aged a couple years since the last time I saw you, so now I have lived in Montana for all of my 54 years. 35 of those years have been in Bozeman. I have 33 years experience with a small, independent, locally owned Bozeman business. Last year, I retired from the City of Bozeman's Finance Department after 25 years of service. During that time, I served on a couple city advisory boards, including the Affordable Housing Board for over 20 years. I'm an MSU graduate, a certified public accountant, and I have a master's degree in business administration. You may remember last time I was here, I said I was more about the how rather than the what, and that is still the case. I don't really have any major issues I'm trying to promote. I'm more about the process. That means greater transparency, accountability, making sure that your voice is heard and that you are truly in charge. So if that all sounds like your cup of tea, then I'm your choice for mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. We're going to shift over now to city commission candidates, starting with Christopher Coburn.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity. Hi, everybody. My name is Christopher Coburn. I use he and him pronouns, and I am a candidate for the four-year commission seat. I'm from Montana, and I was raised by a non-Indigenous family that's called Montana home for at least six generations. At an early age, I was taught the importance of stewardship and community, and those two tenets still guide me to this day. I'm running for the same reason that I sought appointment earlier this year, and that is because I really care about Bozeman. And I understand the challenges many folks face as they work to make a home here, because I also face those same challenges. Like many folks in Bozeman, I rent my apartment and I'm being priced out of our housing market. I work multiple jobs and I'm still no more than a couple paychecks away from having to make really challenging decisions. I navigate and tolerate both micro and macro aggressions on a daily basis out of necessity. And the point of that all is that I have a lot in common with most people in Bozeman, and I'm running and I'm serving so that our voice and our experiences have a seat at the table. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. Now we're going to go to Iho.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Iho Pampamaroy. I'd like to thank you, especially Sita Crew, and thank you for your support. And I also care about our community very deeply. That's why I'm running. Thank you.
Thank you, Iho Pampamaroy. We're going to go to our one more four-year term candidate, Emily Talago.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. I'm running for one of the four-year seats and basically running because I live here, I work here, I love it here. I've formed, bonds with friends here. I've built a life for myself here. And we're facing some really complex problems, and those problems are literally shredding the fiber of our community right now. And a lot of these issues that we're facing could be directly or indirectly attributed to poor decision-making on behalf of the, by our current local officials and our previously elected officials. And while the problems are complex, I don't think that we need complex solutions. We need creative ones. So that's what I'm hoping to bring to the table and to bring others to the table with, is opening up creativity.
Thank you, Emily. And now our next candidate is Jen Magic.
I can't. Oh, there we go. Sorry. Thank you so much for hosting this event tonight. I'm essentially running to continue the work I started approximately 4 years ago, serving on the Bozeman Planning Board. I care very much about creating a healthy community and healthy neighborhoods. And so much of what we're talking about tonight is about just that. It's things like rapid growth, our housing crisis, water, climate change, homelessness, diversity, equity, inclusion, responsible policing, All these issues, I believe, can be addressed through thoughtful planning and working together with partners. I'm very committed to working together to find the best solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Now I'm going to ask Joey Morrison to introduce himself.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. My name is Joey Morrison. I use he and him pronouns, and I'm running for Bozeman City Commission in the 2-year race. I am primarily running out of a need to bring representation of the experiences that I've had in this community that are not represented on the City Commission. During my time here in Bozeman, I've been primarily a crisis worker. I've been a renter. I've worked in the service industry. So worked in fields wherein we are tasked with supporting some of the most marginalized folks in our community. And that paints the perspectives that I have of the world and the way I see problems. Also having been living here as a working class person, as someone who is a renter, as someone who is young, knowing that these perspectives also need to be prioritized when we're trying to champion the progress of our community. And this community literally thrives off of people like me, service industry workers who have worked through the pandemic and continue to work today. And we need a voice in guiding where our community goes. And that's why I'm running for City Commission. Thanks.
Thank you, Joey. And let's turn it over to Evan Rainey for an introduction.
Thanks, Leanne. As you mentioned earlier, I won't be able to stay for the duration of the forum due to personal issues. I apologize about that. Tonight's forum is mostly about the Bozeman Task Force works with regards to women, and that is why I'm very proud to be running alongside Emily, and she'll be able to talk about this at length. Emily has experienced tragic loss. Emily has experienced extraordinary success in ways that are unique to being a woman and only unique to the female experience, and that's why I look forward to being able to hear what she has said throughout the night more than anybody else. But I just want to talk about a couple other things before I leave. Unlike pretty much everyone else here, we haven't scripted a response to any of these forums because we want to be genuine. We want to talk about things. We don't want to say how we care and other people don't, because everybody cares. We don't want to talk about how we've been through the worst or how we've had the worst time, because everybody's been through shit. All this self-flagellation, quite frankly, it's driving me mad. We're genuine. We won't brag about it, and we're willing to be wrong. So please visit our website, call us, talk to us, meet with us. We will engage in all of those things with you. I'm sorry, and you can sense an element of frustration here, and in part that's because I didn't get virtually any sleep last night, and that's my fault. But thanks for your time. I look forward to seeing this in post, and I really firmly believe Emily will provide some fantastic viewpoints tonight.
Thank you, Evan. All right. So now we move to round two of our questions. The candidates receive these questions ahead of time, and they will have 2 minutes to respond to the same question. So for this round, the question that you're responding to is, how will you lead as either the mayor or as a city commissioner to achieve greater gender and other equity, inclusion, and human rights in our community? And we're going to go to the 4-year term candidates to answer first, starting with Iho Pomeroy.
I've been working that area. I will do continuously to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Iho. Now let's go to Emily Talago.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Are we doing the how will we lead?
Yes. Yep. How will you lead as city commissioner to achieve greater gender and other equity, inclusion, and human rights in our community?
Okay. All right. Thanks for your patience. I'm on cell data here. I think insofar as how will you lead, frankly, I don't know that I would lead any differently as a commissioner than I do as a day-to-day person. You lead by example. anytime you talk about equity, inclusion, or human rights, you're talking about dignity of a person. And dignity, I think we have to remember, is not something that we give to someone. It's something inherent to every single person, but our job is to acknowledge it and honor it. So, that looks like things, approach things with generosity and a spirit of kindness and service to others. We have to approach things with compassion, but we also have to approach things with competency. And so In that regard, you know, as a city commissioner, you're part of, you know, the public, you're in the public light, which as someone who's been somewhat of an introvert in my own ways, I'm trying to get used to it. But so that gives you all the more responsibility to show that example. I guess that's how I would lead.
All right. Thank you, Emily. And we're going to go to Christopher now.
Great. Thank you. Before I answer the question, I just want to quickly name that we did get all these questions in advance, and I firmly believe that this community deserves commissioners who come prepared and who take the time to think about the questions if they have the time to do that. So that's why we prepared answers, many of us have. This question is really great, and I'm going to answer it in a personal way, which is that I exist at the intersection of my queerness and my Blackness, and those are identities that I carry with me regardless of which space or community that I'm in, which in Bozeman is usually in predominantly white and straight spaces. So the point of that is that I'm never allowed to forget about the importance of equity and inclusion, and that 100% contributes to the type of leader that I am. I not only have a decade of education, experience, and practice promoting inclusion and advancing human rights, but I'm also informed by a lifetime of lived experience. And I bring that combination of lived and learned experience to the commission every single day. That's the reason why in my 6 months on the commission, I've been able to influence and offer amendments to get us better policies and procedures, and also the reason why I publicly push back against harmful narratives or assumptions. As a city commissioner, I'll continue to lead by example. I'll continue to be bold in the type of policies that I advocate for, and I will not waver from my commitment to make sure that Bozeman is, in fact, a place and a home for everybody. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Christopher. We're going to shift over to our two-year term candidates, starting with Joey Morrison.
Awesome. Thank you. I think this is I really enjoy a question that's as broad as this. And I think the things that I want to lean into are a recognition that in so many ways, the way people campaign shows the ways in which they will govern. I knew from the very beginning that that was how our campaign wanted to center itself, was to be to embrace as many diverse voices as possible. So I have a campaign team of almost 40 volunteers where we have representative voices that are largely working class, but also folks that are, you know, of more privileged class status, as well as folks that identify as queer and trans and non-binary and Black and Indigenous people of color on our campaign team as well, because I do not live those experiences every day. They are not on my mind every second of the day, but I knew I needed to surround myself with people who could keep me accountable to these perspectives, that could keep informing me on the proper way to be championing and fighting for these issues that affect those identities more quickly and more proximately than I. And I knew that was central to how I wanted to run and just how my values have been here in this community. I have primarily been a crisis worker working with agencies like Haven and the Help Center. I've volunteered with agencies like Bridger Care. Every time I get to work with one of these agencies, it sharpens my resolution and understandings of these problems. And central to how I want to lead is leading with accountability, leading with a listening ear that prioritizes championing these voices rather than just prioritizing my own views every step of the way. And knowing that bringing in people who are closest to the problem means that I'm bringing in people who are also closest to the solution. And hoping that if I run and win, I can work with other commissioners to lay the groundwork for this to be a more diverse and more accessible status and race for people to take in the future.
Right. There's time. Thank you, Joey. Jen Magic, it's your turn.
Great. Thank you. Really appreciate some of the answers tonight. So I really believe that constant vigilance is needed if we're going to obtain any form of equity, inclusion, and betterment as far as human rights are concerned. Things don't change overnight, but we need to be on things all the time. We need to, I really believe, question why things are the way they are. If you look at the city commission race, we have 3 women running and 6 men. If you look at the county courthouse, it's been over 17 years since we've had a woman county commissioner. And I think that's problematic. And it's little things like that that I think we need to question. And if we want to try to promote greater diversity and elevate some of the voices that we're not hearing from, we need to question why things are the way they are. I am really committed to asking these questions and drilling down on answers and working with partners, like CEDAW and all the partners who have contributed to this event tonight to find those answers and to start working on solutions that are going to work for the betterment of everyone. So thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Now we're going to hear from our mayoral candidates, starting with Terry Cunningham.
Thank you. I believe the best predictor of future behavior and how I will lead is past performance. I have a 4-year record that you can look back on and review. So what have I done in these areas? In 2018, I led an effort to raise the minimum wage for Bozeman City employees on a graduated basis over 3 years. Studies have conclusively shown that raising the minimum wage specifically benefits women and minorities. Once the measure was passed, I challenged other area employers to follow suit, and some did. I led the effort to rewrite the City of Bozeman's policies to require all vendors doing business with the city to abide by the city's equal pay policies. After George Floyd's murder, I was the driving force on the commission to perform a top-to-bottom review of our diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, which resulted in the current inclusive city effort that has partnered with MSU, Bozeman Health, and the Montana Racial Equity Project to quantify the gaps in equity and seek community solutions. Since there wasn't a budget line item to pay for diversity, equity, and inclusion training for city staff, I personally arranged for a $54,000 grant to pay for the highest level of staff training from the National League of Cities Race, Equity, and Leadership Program, an award-winning resource. As mayor, I'll continue to advocate for policies and partnerships that will allow us to achieve our city motto of the most livable place. I won't take the view that we need to fix all the potholes first before we turn our attention to issues like affordable housing and childcare. After all, we can pave our streets with gold, but if only the wealthy and the privileged can afford to live here, what kind of city have we built? We need to lead by example in areas like comparable pay so we can address the systemic inequality between male and female-oriented jobs. We need to adopt the principles of CEDAW. We can be the most livable place, but it takes honest reflection, constant improvement, and a commitment to one another.
Thank you, Terry. Brian Lemaire's.
Thank you. In my opinion, the way we've been going about this could be improved. The way that equity and inclusion has been presented in this community is to basically assume that everybody knows what it's all about and to assume that everybody thinks it's a problem. So I think step one needs to be more and better data. The recent equity gaps analysis only had 1,500 people respond to the survey, or less than 3% of Bozeman's population. That's even lower than the roughly 1 in 10 Bozeman residents who responded to the survey that created the strategic plan. So we need more and better data. But ultimately, we need to recognize that things are never going to be perfect in this world. Never. Not anywhere. Not in Bozeman. Not anywhere. There's always going to be racists, homophobes, and all around just complete jackasses. Pardon my French. We are never, ever going to fix that. But they represent an even lower percentage of the population than the number of people who took the GAP survey or the strategic plan survey. So how is it that we're letting these people, the racists, homophobes, and jackasses, define who Bozeman is? So as mayor, I would ask all newcomers to please give Bozeman a chance. Please leave behind any baggage that you're carrying from other cities or states. Please try to clear your head and make a fresh start in Bozeman. And instead of labeling people using characteristics they cannot control, let's please get back to judging people by things they can control, like work ethic and content of character, because that's how Bozeman has always been for the 35 years that I've been here. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. All right, so that was the first question that all candidates had received and had a chance to respond to. And now we're going to move into the second question that they've also prepared responses for. This is round three. You all also have 2 minutes to respond. And the question is this. Bozeman is growing, and with growth comes changes impacting women and girls in our community. These changes are impacting the community safety, economic security, and health and well-being of the diversity of Bozeman's women and girls. How will you measure and take action on these impacts to create or modify city policy, programs, resources, and representation? This question is also in the chat for your reference. I'm going to put it in there one more time. I have 2 minutes to respond. And we're going to start with the two-year term candidates, beginning with Jen Magic.
Great. Thank you. I don't think it's a coincidence that only one current city commissioner has children. We have four individuals currently serving who don't have children. And I remember former mayor Sean Becker was a neighbor of mine, talk about the struggles of finding childcare during his tenure as mayor. And mayor position and all of our positions really on the commission require long night meetings and random meetings during the day. So that makes childcare really difficult, and it makes opportunity for certain individuals like mothers with children to come into this arena. So I think the city really needs to take steps to try to address that and to try to offer childcare services, whether it's during meetings, which could also potentially help staff, could also help members of the public who want to attend meetings. And I really believe that the city should be proactive in addressing childcare. I really appreciate the county taking steps to build both workforce housing and potentially a childcare center on county land. So this is just kind of one suggestion of something the city can do to try to create better inroads for women with children to serve and participate both on our city commissions and our board.
Thank you, Jen. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Joey Morrison.
Thank you. yes, yeah, central to so we know so many in so many communities, and Bozeman is not unique in this, that when communities struggle, often women and girls and trans and queer folks suffer worse. Like, we know that this is the case here in Bozeman. And so we know at the center of addressing these problems is a recognition that when we take aggressive and innovative actions to champion things like affordable housing, things like childcare, things like accessible reproductive healthcare, we know that this benefits our entire community, makes our entire community safer by championing these efforts that are affecting women and folks who might be identifying as queer or trans or non-binary. We know that the policies like that will have that effect. I want to take a moment just to highlight a perspective that I think is important when we're talking about the safety of our community, as well as trying to champion ways in which we can grow the diversity of Bozeman. While I was working at the MSU Voice Center, we were able to collaborate with a group called Students Against Sexual Assault, which actually created the Voice Center back in 1997. But one of the cool, really powerful tools that they had at their disposal to support our work was the Survivor Fund. Organizations like Haven use the Survivor Fund as well. And it's basically a pot of non-discretionary money that can support survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Things that you couldn't ever get grant funding for, like a survivor whose room was triggering to them and they needed to redecorate their room, being able to use funds in that way. That's something that that's just like a novel component that I want to just kind of give voice to a little bit, as we're all going to probably talk about childcare and talk about affordable housing. But something like the Survivor Fund, or funneling city funds into the Survivor Fund to broaden the reach of these resources that are really, really important for us, a community, to be able to take seriously the charge of providing support and resources to folks who are survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Thanks.
Thank you, Joey. We're going to hear from our mayoral candidates now, starting with Brian Lemires.
Am I unmuted? You can hear me? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, without any data or specific examples given, I have to apologize in advance if I'm missing the intent of this question. So I'll just go with the first thing that came to mind, a real life experience. It sounds like you're saying that things were different for women and girls before Bozeman started growing so fast. And as I think back to when Bozeman was smaller, I guess I can recall a situation where that was indeed true. It was back in the early 90s. I applied for several jobs at the city of Bozeman before I was actually hired in 1996. And I found out later from one of the women on the hiring team at the time that the reason I didn't get at least one of those jobs that I applied for was because of my gender. It was because I was male. And when I finally did get hired in 1996, that hiring manager had to be strongly convinced by the rest of the recruiting team to hire me because she did not think I would be a good fit in an office full of women, as was the case in the city of Bozeman's finance department at that time, back before Bozeman really started growing. So when I found all this out, actually just a few years ago, was I mad? No, not at all. I found it amusing, and I still do, because I know it is not a perfect world, not even for straight white men. So my answer is that as mayor, I will push for a society based on recognition of the individual. We are all individuals. That is what we have in common, whether we are young women or old men or black or brown or white or gay or lesbian or straight, we are all individuals. And regardless of whatever classification some people or groups try to put us into, there will always be good individuals and there will always be bad individuals, always. And as mayor, I will make it fully known and recognized in no uncertain terms that bad individuals and discrimination of any kind are not welcome in Bozeman. So in other words, the safety, economic security, health, and well-being of all individuals in Bozeman will be protected by me as mayor, especially including Bozeman's young women women and girls. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Terry, it's your turn.
Thank you. I also have a record of accomplishments when it comes to breaking down barriers in the areas of safety, economic security, and health. Access to healthcare resources was identified in our gaps analysis as a barrier to success. In my work with Bozeman Health, I successfully expanded and funded mobile outreach clinics to try to remove barriers to healthcare access, increase childhood immunization rates, and provide low-income women with mammography vouchers. Access to affordable housing was the primary issue identified in the gaps analysis as a barrier to success. My work in affordable housing space is extensive. The largest affordable housing project in Bozeman history would not have happened without my personal involvement in problem solving. Without my ability to help HRDC purchase the Boulevard apartments, 40 of our most vulnerable citizens would have been evicted from their homes. The community housing levy, which will provide a substantial, reliable funding source for future affordable housing projects, would not be on the ballot without me. I believe we have more work to do in ensuring the safety of women and girls in Bozeman. We need to strengthen our ability to enforce orders of protection for victims of intimate partner violence and educate our judges about effective sentencing alternatives. We need to educate and empower local hotel employees, bartenders, streamlined bus drivers, and students to recognize instances of human trafficking, date rape use, drug use, and the predatory sexual behavior. One of the candidates said the answer to these problems is to provide women and girls with guns and jiu-jitsu training, as if nunchucks and throwing stars are the answer to discrimination, objectification, and dehumanizing behavior. An intersectional gender analysis funded by philanthropic support will help us measure our ability to ensure that Bozeman is a safe place for women and girls. I'm confident that I can secure the funding to take this important step. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Now to our four-year term candidates, starting with Emily.
Okay, so we're on the round or the growing and changing, the question two, round three.
Yes, it's also posted in the chat, Emily.
Okay, yes, this place is growing and it's changing. I mean, some of these changes are good and some of them are bad, but I guess, you know, as a commissioner, we probably want to focus on the, obliterating, I'd say, the policies that are good for a few, but bad for a lot. And, you know, so of course, the first step to that would be, you know, how do we know the issues, what the issues are? And as opposed to using, you know, consulting firms and using big data and relying on it to game out all of our actions, you know, I think we have to instead, you know, kind of recognize that it's not the loudest voice, but the most voices, you know, that's where we should be directing resources to. Right now, it's kind of a policy that we, you know, disproportionately allocate resources to those who ask for it. And that's not the job of a commissioner. The job is to know from boots on the ground people where resources go. And I'd like to reuse the remainder of my time. I want to respond to Commissioner Coburn's comment about prepared statements in response to Evan. I think you misunderstood what Evan was saying, that just because we don't have prepared perfectly timed statements doesn't mean that we did not take the time to think about these questions and care intensely about them. Evan's my tenant. He lives downstairs. And I can attest to the fact that since we first received them, we've spent a lot of time considering the answers to these questions. And so I just want to use the remainder of my time for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. And now, Christopher.
Thank you for this question. I think it's a really important, very interesting question. And the way I'm kind of going to approach it is just to lean on the training that I have, which is that I'm a public health professional, which means, among other things, that being guided by the reality of what's happening on the ground, the trends, and the perspectives of people who are closest to the issues that we're trying to solve is something that I've been trained to do and something that I do every day in my professional working life. So I'll take the same approach to combating the negative experiences that many women and girls feel and have in our community. I think the first step we talked, I think all of us talked about in a few different ways, is getting us the actual data that we need. And in our community, that is proving to be challenging. A lot of our institutions use fragmented data. They don't have systems that communicate with each other. They don't ask the same questions and they ask incomplete questions. So we don't actually uncover the issues where they lie. I happen to have a lot of experience with the types of needs assessments that our community is going to need to make informed policy decisions that are going to impact folks. I do that every 3 years for the health system and our community health needs assessment process. Before I was a commissioner, I was on the team that wrote and crafted and then interviewed candidates to do the, or sorry, interviewed firms to do the equity indicators and gaps analysis project. And just on that really quickly, the important part about the people that respond to that survey is that those are people who are generally underrepresented in those types of surveys. So we had really important and powerful voices included in that data, voices that are close to the issues, which helps us understand what's going on. So for me, after we complete all of that type of data collection and analysis, it's important for us to use that to make really informed policies that are responsive to the needs as they actually exist, by listening to the people who are actually impacted by those issues. And that's what I'll intend to do.
Thank you, Christopher. And last person to speak on this question is Iho.
Thank you. I do not know how I managed raising two children and run a small business. Somehow I did it. Now my daughter came home with two babies. One is 15 months old, and the other one is 3 and 10 months old. And then I see that the difficulties. So our children are our future. So we have, I see that daycare challenges, our life is growing and complicated. Right now, currently, household, we need two incomes. So I know, especially mom, raising children and go outside the world, come back, and the work is waiting up for them. It's tough. So what do we have to do? Our city has good partners and the Gallatin County, Gallatin colleges. So we need to ask them to produce more trained child care providers. Thank you.
Thank you, Iho. Before I move into the next round, which is the candidates had a choice of four questions to respond to. They're in the chat, so you can look at those as well. I want to remind the audience that you have the opportunity to pose questions to the candidates, and you'll just want to direct them to Jan Strout in the chat. And she's collecting those, and we'll select a diversity of questions, as many as we can answer in the final question portion of this forum. All right. So there were four questions that the candidates were given. They are able to choose which one that they wanted to respond to. I'm not going to read each one. I don't want to take our time to do that, but you can see them in the chat. And perhaps as I call on you to respond to these, you can just let us know if you are answering A, B, C, or D. All right. And for this round, we're going to start with the mayoral candidates. And we're going to have Terry Cunningham have the floor first.
Thank you. And I will be answering question A. Okay.
Comparable word. Thank you.
Yep. So there's an old saying about a gender pay inequity. The reason that men earn more is because they choose high-paying jobs like engineer, CEO, and firefighter, while women choose lower paying jobs like female engineer and female CEO and female firefighter. And sadly, it is true. But while that is true that there are pay disparities within the exact same job for men and women, a larger issue is the concept of comparable worth, that people whose jobs require the same level of education, training, and expertise should be paid comparable wages. With the help of the Bozeman Professional Women, the city of Bozeman has been self-reporting on the results of equal pay programs, and we've seen some incremental improvements over time, but the gender pay gap is still very much a reality. What's become evident to me in studying the data is that the real issue for the city of Bozeman and other employers is this notion of comparable worth. Much of the pay gap is due to big differences between wages paid for traditionally male jobs and those paid for traditionally female jobs. Is this a 2-minute question?
It is. I'm just, Ellie, was that for 2 minutes? Okay. You have another minute, Terry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
We know that there are depressed wages in largely female professions, such as healthcare, childcare, and elementary education, compared to those wages of truck drivers, parking lot attendants, or vocational educators in mostly male professions. Jobs that require comparable skill, education, and responsibility yield much different salaries depending entirely on whether the jobs are filled mostly by men or by women. The results of these artificially depressed wages, women often find themselves unable to support themselves and their families and are forced to accept public assistance. A more holistic way of looking at compensation is to objectively measure the value of various jobs and the skills, training, and education they require. It'll take a sea change in our approach to how we view certain jobs, as well as reevaluating our pay bands. But it's the only way to address the historically prevalent systemic biases that are baked into the current way we value jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. And I'm sorry for the confusion earlier. The response is you have 2 minutes to answer these questions. We're going now over to Brian.
Okay, thank you. I am answering question C about the police violence. And I would respectfully say again, let's please get back to things that people can control when we're trying to figure stuff like this out. And the one thing that I'm pretty sure would be common to almost all police violence is that the accused individual resisted arrest. In other words, their behavior, something they could control. And without any supporting data, and with all due respect, I just cannot believe the premise of this question to be true, that Bozeman police are actually targeting women and members of other specific groups. But anyway, if you remember anything that I say here tonight, please let it be this: do not resist arrest ever. I can guarantee you that resisting arrest is going to make everything more difficult for you, from how long you are kept in the detention center before they let you bail out, to how hard the judge throws the book at you when it comes time for sentencing. It's all up to you, your actions, things you can control. And with all due respect, I think there's a danger that questions like this could become a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think it's possible that some members of the groups that are listed here could now test the limits of any police officer they encounter and push that police officer's buttons just to get a reaction so they can try to prove a point or prove this point. And police officers are human beings just like you and me. And I would ask you, are you perfect? And I know that I certainly am not. And no police department is ever going to be perfect either. And that's why we need to make sure that the people at the top of our police department are the kind of people that won't tolerate this kind of thing and will eradicate it immediately once it's detected. And I can guarantee you that after having worked at the city of Bozeman for 25 years and getting to know many members of our police department personally, that the people at the top of your police department right now are exactly the kind of people you want and need. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Going over to the four-year term candidates and starting with Christopher.
Thank you. So I did prepare something, but on the heels of that very problematic statement, I'm going to shift gears and talk a little bit about question C. And I want to frame this by saying that it is naive to think that for some reason, Bozeman is immune to the sort of headline-grabbing experiences that happen in other parts of the country, in fact, other parts of the world. The fact that we haven't had, in at least my time in Bozeman, a national headline-grabbing incident is not because we're doing something different, it's because it has not happened here yet. And that is a really important point, has not happened here yet. So for us to prevent that, we need to really make heavy investments in other things that are public safety-related, like childcare, like affordable housing, like access to behavioral health care, like doing the things that the deputy mayor talked about to increase wages for working families. All of those things are protective. And those are the sorts of things that we need to be thinking about as a community, as part of our public safety conversations. I also think it's really critical that we listen to and we hear from the voices of people who would never push the limits with law enforcement, because they know if they do, that could be life or death. And so we need to make sure that we're not othering that experience. So we're not saying you have no reason to be afraid because I don't have that experience. What we need to be doing is making sure the people who are experiencing that fear and from the threat of police violence are actually the ones who are helping us understand how we can make things different. And that's what I'll do as a commissioner, is bring those voices central to that conversation. Throughout this campaign, I've tried really hard to make sure that we are approaching everything with direct conversation and being as respectful as possible. And I have to say that comments like the ones that we just heard are extremely hurtful to people who experience all types of violence every day in our community, even if some of us don't understand what that violence looks or feels like. So I just want to take some time to say that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Christopher. Over to Iho now.
Thank you. C must be a very popular one. I also do like to answer C. Proper training of law enforcement is very essential, as well as police body cameras and the thorough public investigations of instances of police use of force. Thank you.
Thank you, Iho. All right. For our two-year term candidates, we'll start with Jen Magic.
Great. Thank you. I also am going to take A on comparable worth. And I was going to start with a personal anecdote. I worked for Gallatin County for 10 years. And when I worked there as planning director, it was revealed that I was getting paid 20% less than comparable jobs in the industry. And it wasn't brought to the attention
of the county officials, my bosses, until the county did a salary survey. And the salary survey was fortunately beneficial in bringing my pay up to where it needed to be in the industry. So I really believe in the value of surveys and studies and data to help not only, you know, to analyze equal pay for equal work, but comparable worth. And the city has a responsibility, I feel, to conduct these studies and to make sure that we are being fair, not just to women, but to marginalized individuals. And to set an example for the community, I have a copy here of the proposed CEDAW resolution, which I very much support. I've read through this. I believe it's something that the city commission should fully adopt. I'm prepared to adopt it, and I very much appreciate being able to do it in a manner that we can add it to our work plan, add proper funding, and make it fully transparent to the public.
Thank you, Jen. And my apologies to Emily. I'm going to go back and unmute you, and you have a chance to answer one of the questions. I apologize. That was mine.
That's okay. I guess I'm gonna go for A. How would you gather evidence of the disparities and enact a plan of action to address them? We know what's happening. Unfortunately, what we also know too, and what I've seen over and over again, is that policy can be woefully ineffective in preventing these things from happening. And that doesn't mean that we're powerless. Like, you know, so we did the indicators gap with the city, and I'll be totally frank, I was pretty disappointed with what the product was. I was really hoping to learn something that I didn't know before, and regurgitating, you know, what we already had from, you know, data we already had from a myriad of previously funded studies, mostly Numerica data, census, things like that. We keep making the same, mistake, and we're reducing people to numbers. I'm pretty tired, actually, of, government and other entities making these checklists, of these like socially woke things, when our boots on the ground say it's not actually changing anything. And so again, I think it's one of those situations where like, it is absolutely time to act. It's time to stop studying. We know that these things happen. We need to start, being in the community, identifying where these resources will need them and immediately getting them there. From a policy standpoint, there is no policy that we can change. Even though I applaud the work that went into the proposed ordinance, I mean, a statement like, therefore, we will have something to the effect of a city free from discrimination against women and free from violence. I mean, that's like, are we going into a dystopian novel here? I think it's time to act and put the resources where they need to be. And that's how I would do. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. And now we can hear from Joey Morrison.
Awesome. Thank you. I was kind of unsure which question I wanted to answer, but hearing responses, I want to focus on C. I want to start out with just some baseline understandings and kind of explain why we even look at law enforcement as something that we're critical of when there is violence in our communities. We know racism and white supremacy are real. Transphobia is real. Like, homophobia is real. Classism is real. We know that there are real systems at work in our community, in this state, in our country, on this planet, that lift some perspectives up, lift some identities up, and harm others. We know that to be true. If you're not there yet, you're very behind on where we need to be tackling these issues as a city. Why we look at law enforcement is because they are tasked with protecting and serving. They are tasked as showing up to help us in our times of need. But for so many people in our community and in the state and in our country again, they don't get that. They get fear, they get violence, they get harm rather than the help that they originally sought. So that's the center of why we even look at law enforcement as something to be critical of when we do see instances of police violence, why it's different than a neighbor harming another neighbor. What we know that we need and that our community deserves and would benefit from is having people who are trained de-escalation experts, people who work for agencies like the Help Center, Haven, the Warming Center, people who day in and day out work with people experiencing, you know, whether it be a substance use related crisis or a crisis related to mental health, or people who have identities that we weren't socialized to know growing up. We have been taught and we've been trained in how to work with these individuals, and we do it every day. We need those people showing up rather than law enforcement to support these individuals. It's not about police being inherently bad people. It's about picking the right person to show up to these environments where we know police have not been doing the right job. That's the whole reason why we look at law enforcement.
All right. Thank you, Joey. We're making a couple of adjustments here. And one is that we are going to have questions that the audience has posed. And then we're also going to give you a chance, since we had a couple of candidates who weren't able to be here. You'll have 3 minutes for your closing statements, just so that you're prepared. So I wanted to let you know that. All right. So now we're going to move into questions that the audience has been sending to Jan. And for this round, you will have, Ellie, let's give 2 minutes for a response on these. Okay. All right. So you have 2 minutes to respond to the question. I'm going to drop it in the chat so you can see it. So I'll read it first and then I'll put it in the chat so everyone can see it. The question is, there's a lot of money from ARPA Act for emergency rental grants that are not getting delivered to people in need. How would you address this? Let me put that in the chat for you so you can see it as well. And then, Ellie, we're going to give 2 minutes for responses on this. And we're going to start with the four-year term candidates, beginning with Iho.
So the thing is, we get the money, we didn't distribute. The question is, I just want to clarify, didn't get the distributed the money properly to the people? That's the question?
Yes. So how would you address that this emergency rental grant monies is not getting to the people who need it?
We do our best. How about that? We do our best. If we didn't get the people, the right people, I do know our city and our staffs do our best and try to do our best. Thank you.
Thank you, Iho. Let's move over to Christopher.
You know, I'm just going to start by naming that I don't know exactly the exact situation that this question is trying to get at. I think, you know, there's some confusing elements to the way that ARPA funding was allocated to states. There's some that go to the state to allocate. There's some that go to the county to allocate. There's some that come to local governments to be responsible for. And so that could be a part of what's going on, is kind of understanding all the different ways that those funds were allocated and who's responsible for them. I will say for the $12 million allocation that we got, I was a really strong proponent of making sure that a big chunk of our funding went directly to households who were still being impacted by COVID-19, including doing things like helping to pay for rent if they weren't able to pay for rent because they lost their jobs during the pandemic. So that's the sort of control that I would have as a commissioner. And I did just that. And I'm really proud of that because that was the right thing for us to be doing. So I do think that the way that we sort of talk about this is just making sure that people understand that when you, that as a commissioner, I'll be sure that any money that I have control over will be going directly to individuals and households. And I will be a really strong voice to make sure that any federal dollars that we get, that I'll always advocate first, that those go to direct individuals, because that's what those funds are really designed to be doing. So yeah, I hope that's kind of a hard question to ask. I'm not entirely sure if this is a problem that the Bozeman City Commission can address with those funds that this person's talking about.
Thank you, Christopher. Let's go to Emily.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, the chat bar blocks it. You know, insofar as the ARPA funds are concerned, you know, some of them started rolling out, and there is that trickle-down occurrence where, you know, the federal government allocates it to states, the state then allocates it to counties, and county then allocates it to municipalities. A lot of these funds are, I wouldn't say necessarily earmarked is the best word, but have pretty strict restrictions on how they can be distributed and who can distribute them. Ours, I believe, were handled at the county level. The first batch of ones that we got were distributed amongst nonprofits in our community. You know, I did make public comment at the meeting in which that was designated. There was an application process. That I did take issue with the fact that when you're talking about recovery funds, we needed to be a lot more, discerning and selective in which nonprofits supported which support services in our community. And I don't think we did that due diligence because we know, insofar as different priorities are concerned, that things like housing, you know, if we support housing, then in tandem, we can also be indirectly supporting mental health. So I do think that we missed the mark big time when those applications came through. And that's not to say that our community partners and nonprofits in the area haven't used them, the funds, you know, as best as they can, but it was the decision of the commission to say this first batch is going to go to these nonprofits. And I can't see Gal with the timer. I don't know where I'm at here. But I'll just follow up in saying that I think this is one of those instances again, where, you know, a top-down approach was problematic. So thank you.
Emily, for not seeing the time, that was exact timing. Thank you.
Oh, I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks, Emily. We're going to move over to Joey Morrison next.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. I love talking about ARPA money. I'm assuming that this is really getting at the ways in which it's been used in our city, like where Bozeman allocated its ARPA funds. I want to just say really quickly that there's effectively almost no restrictions on what ARPA money could be used for. Right on the, like, you know, .gov website, it says basically anything that was impacted by COVID, and there's not a facet of our lived experience in the last 18 months that has not been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. And it does specifically actually give a guiding advice to use that money to for rental assistance. And Bozeman did not do that. Bozeman did not use its $12 million to support people who are struggling in enough of a capacity. Christopher Coburn fought for like $500,000 to move towards that, but that was not, I mean, we know that there are people struggling right now. There's no reason why that money shouldn't have been used, every single penny of it, to provide support to folks who were having to make really hard decisions and still are right now, that are having to make decisions about whether they are able to get the groceries that they need, whether they can afford childcare, whether they need to leave this community or this state altogether. That money should have gone straight back into the community. And I think that that's a central component of what I suspect is like feeling like it wasn't being used to deliver to the people in need that comes into question, is that, yeah, that money should have gone to the people who are being hit the hardest, not being earmarked for future development projects and things like that. Not that those things aren't important, but that there are people who are really, really struggling and have been through this entire pandemic and are struggling right now. Thanks.
Joey. And let's go over to Jen.
Great. Thank you. Just to clarify a couple of things, there's been a couple of different sources of ARPA funding. Some have gone directly to cities and counties. Christopher talked about the $12 million. That went to the city of Bozeman. Gallatin County received a certain amount. And the state, so the state of Montana, as well as states throughout the country, have received a pocket of money. And the emergency rental grants are coming from the state, which is one reason Bozeman chose not to do them, because there's a state program. And having worked in for federal government, there are often hiccups and parts of the system, unfortunately, that don't work. And it can be the unfortunate kind of reality of government red tape. And in the case of that, and in the case of something where there is so much need, you know, with COVID, there has been need kind of across the board, whether it's small businesses, folks trying to either meet their mortgage or pay for their monthly rent, it's appropriate for government to step out and help. And it's also appropriate for government in those cases to make the process easy and accessible. So something happens that somehow the emergency rental grants coming out of the state are getting hung up. We need to go to the governor. We need to go to our senators and ask why, and, you know, work with our partners like HRDC who have these connections with these grants too. So be proactive in finding solutions to try to get that money to the people who need it.
Thank you, Jen. We're going to shift over to the mayoral candidates, starting with Terry.
Thank you. As Jen mentioned, this I believe this question actually goes to the state emergency rental grants. And I think there was a total of $152 million originally appropriated in this area. They just announced that they are reallocating funds because they didn't get applications into other areas like supporting hospitals, bringing in healthcare workers from other states and some other areas. And I think it is a failure in communication, and I think it's a failure in opportunity. The state set up a system whereby you sort of have to know about this rather than the state reaching out through qualified partners and doing the marketing and knowing how to market to people in need to get these into the hands of people that really, really need it. It was a failure in communication, and the money was there. They could have used, given marketing funds to HRDC, who knows and has regular conversations with folks who could use this. And it was a failure. And this is similar to what's happening in the area of housing. There are hundreds of millions of dollars that can be used for housing, and we have not seen an adequate a proposal coming out about this. We know that, for instance, the legislature passed a $15 million multi-household low-income housing tax credit that the governor vetoed. It is on a state level. They are just saying, let them eat cake, let them drown. Because even when we allocate the money, we're not going to let them know about it, and we're not going to use the resources that are necessary to get money in the hands of the people who need it.
Thank you, Terry. And Brian.
Thank you. Well, this will probably blow you away, but I'm going to agree with most of the people that most of the answers you've heard here tonight. And this is based on what we've seen done with the ARPA money in Missoula. And I mean, you see the kinds of things that Missoula is using their money for, whether it be homeless shelter or whether it be other to meet other housing needs. And you sit here and you say, hey, wait a minute. Didn't our city hall basically say that ours was going to be limited to just the infrastructure and the technology and then of course the money that did go out to the HRDC and the nonprofits and Haven and things like that. But slowly you start, the situation is revealing itself to be, at least it from where I see it, is that there was some discretion that we could have had at City Hall that we didn't utilize. And with all due respect to this current commission, I think they let City Hall direct their decision-making a little too much. And it gets confusing about what I'm about to say. But if you look at I don't know if any of you have been out to my website, but since I started running in 2017, I talk about power to the people. Let's put you back in charge. Those aren't just because I'm still stuck in the 60s and 70s, which I am. But what I meant was when I started running in 2017 is I on the inside looking out and watching all the commission meetings and seeing how things are presented to you and what happens from the outside and looking at it from the other side, I'm like, hey, this commission isn't running the show here. The people are not in charge out there. So that's why I advocated at the time for a full-time elected somebody in that city manager position that would be elected. And I have to tell you, since then, I would expand that statement to include your city attorney. I think they're the two most powerful people, I would argue, at any given city commission meeting, your city manager and your city attorney, and they are not accountable to you at all. And they're intelligent people in our commission. I mean, they don't, what are they going to question these people when they tell them how things are and how things have to be? I heard missed opportunity. I think we did have a missed opportunity here. I think a lot, this money, that $12 million, we're using it for infrastructure projects that were already identified in our capital improvement program to be funded otherwise. And we're a property. Am I cutting too short here? We're a property tax state.
Time,
I got to tell you, Bozeman's coffers are still flush after COVID, right? Now, recreation program revenues and things like that suffered.
Right. But Brian, you're at time, Brian.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So we have another question from the audience. I have already dropped it in the chat. So I'll give you a chance to look at it and I'll read it out loud. This one says, many women who are victims of violence in Bozeman have stated that the police response to them has made their situation worse. As a commissioner or mayor, what would you do to remedy this situation? And for this round, we're going to start with the two-year term candidates. Going to Jen Magic first.
Great, thank you. So violence to women needs to be taken seriously. And for our police department or any other police department not to take it seriously is problematic. And I would say that, across the board to any group, any individual. So I would look at our police department. I would look at things like police training. Do we need more training? What are the stats out there? I'd want a really good understanding of trying to get to the root of the problem and fix it through, like I said, training and or adding more women to the police force. That's all I can kind of think of right now. But I'm completely open to suggestions and would want to find answers to this problem. I would not let it lay without response.
Thank you, Jen. Over to Joey Morrison.
Yeah, thank you. Really, really appreciate this question. And I think, there's a lot that the city could be doing. I've worked with a lot of clients who straight up decided that they didn't want to work with us because they knew that we had ever worked with law enforcement. I've worked with survivors who, were pressured to either report or to not report by talking with law enforcement. We know that this is a problem in law enforcement and how they support survivors of domestic and sexual violence that do come forward and are seeking resources. We've known this for a very, very long time. We know that this is a problem here in Bozeman. And so it does feel tough to for folks sitting on the commission right now to say, I would want to do these things. I don't know what to do because this has been the case under their watch. But things that we can be doing are looking at the ways in which survivors can access things like temporary orders of protection, or just various resources that actually do potentially make their lives safer that can be done without working with law enforcement. What are the ways that we as a community can champion the safety of survivors of domestic and sexual violence that doesn't involve bringing in the courts, that doesn't involve bringing in a police officer? One of the big things is really diversifying the knowledge around the empowerment model, which is central to agencies like Haven, like the Help Center, like the Voice Center, who believe at the core there's a really important understanding that survivors of domestic and sexual violence are the true experts in their experience. They know best how to keep themselves safe. They know best the resources they need. And to just have that as a base understanding for folks who would ever be interfacing with a survivor of domestic and sexual violence is something that we could really start very promptly.
Right. Thank you, Joey. Let's go over to Brian Lemires.
Okay. Well, Joey says they know best, and that was going to be the premise of my response too. I mean, I'm assuming we're talking about domestic violence victims, and then the police show up, and the woman is like, oh yeah, everything's fine. Or they get the problem resolved, and are quote unquote resolved, and then the cops are gone, and then there's hell to pay. I imagine something like that, or even if she is removed for a night or two, she comes back, and your emotions are involved, your heart's involved. It's terrible. It's a terrible situation. You know what you'd love to do to a guy like that. But anyway, it's what Joey says. I mean, these people are going to know what's best. I mean, there's been a lot of money over the years when I was, in the finance department. I thought that was one of the best grants we ever had, was that it started out as domestic violence and then domestic assistance, Violence Against Women Act, things like that. I don't know what the final manifestation of it was. But anyway, that was some good federal funding there. The police department did a great job of handling that. They worked with a lot of partners in the community, including Haven and CASA and Gallatin County and others. And I mean, those are the people that know what's best to do there. It's a heartbreaking situation. Yeah, the last thing we want to do is have the police response make anything worse. And I know I probably sounded rather naive in that regard to you folks earlier. It gets back to, there's not enough time to talk these all the way out, and I'd love to do that with any of you wanted to. But anyway, I think Joey said it best. They know best. What did they recommend? What could have been done to make it better? And, so I guess more communication, just like the answer to a lot of the world's problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Terry.
Thanks. Just to build on Joey's response, we need to build empathy and understanding at every step along the process. That includes the first encounter with police. It includes when people reach out for resources and counseling, and it includes the judicial process. And we need to build that empathy and that understanding from the victims themselves. And those powerful statements and powerful testimony that they can give, and get that education throughout. This is an unrelated thing, but the sheriff and police department tried to do some empathy and understanding around mental health issues. And so they actually had headphones that police officers could put on that replicated the thoughts in the head of someone going through a schizophrenic experience. And it was so powerful that some of the police officers said, I have to take them off. I can't listen. It is just disturbing to me But it created a higher level of understanding about what they were, what the person they were encountering was going through. We have to have and find a way to have that same powerful experience communicated to law enforcement as well. We also need, I think, to educate judges about the orders of protection and so on and so forth. I heard someone say that their abuser violated an order of protection 43 times. That was a powerful moment in my life when I heard that. And I could not believe that the system allows that to happen. And so being able to provide this empathetic, put yourself in the situation, understand what it's like to be a victim has to happen all along that decision-making tree and all along that process.
Thank you, Terry. We're going to move to the four-year candidates, starting with Emily.
Okay. Police are in a tough situation when it comes to domestic violence because they're charged with, enforcing the law. And as we know, and Deputy Mayor Cunningham just briefly mentioned that the law many times, can fail and many times does fail. I can cite an experience whereby being informed that if someone has a legal residence somewhere and there hasn't been physical violence, that person, you can't force them to leave. And as most people would know, and I'm, emotional violence, emotional abuse, verbal abuse is usually what precludes physical violence. But, I can't talk about policy on this one. I can't help but acknowledge that wherever this question came from, someone experienced this. Someone, I don't know if it was the person who asked the question or someone they know, experienced this. And I'm sorry. And that means we fucked up. And I can't imagine that you have trust for the system or anything to do with it. And I completely understand then not wanting to approach anybody in the system about it. But I am thankful that there are people in the community. Joey, you're in there helping people out. And I hope that, even though we understandably have lost your trust, that these other organizations can, fill us in on what we can do and can't do. But it's disappointing doesn't even capture that. But yeah, we fucked up and I'm sorry.
Thank you, Emily. I'm going to turn it over to Christopher.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks to whoever posed this question. And I do agree with many of the things that the other candidates have shared. And I just want to sort of connect this back to the previous question we talked about police. When we talked about the experience of experiencing violence from the police. And it is true that if the institutions that are responsible for protecting people, as we talked about earlier, people who are responsible for coming to provide support, if that experience leads to more pain and suffering, that is in itself an act of institutional violence. And so that's what we're talking about when we talk about police violence in all of its forms. And that's why it's really important to name that it does exist, because we have an example just on this call where someone experienced it. I will just share too that I do agree that one of the ways that we can really address that experience and hopefully make things better is to bring all the stakeholders together to have really honest and really productive conversations where we can learn and grow and figure out better ways to respond. And I contributed to that early in 2020. We helped to host a convening, a conference that brought together law enforcement, healthcare workers, social service providers, and survivors to have a day-long conversation about what the best way to respond and support people who are experiencing domestic violence looks like, and how do we make adjustments across these these support systems that should be working together to provide the best possible outcome for people who are experiencing violence. So those are sorts of things that we need more of. And I think those are the sorts of convenings that can actually get us the solutions that we would need, the solutions that the commission can adopt and make things and improve the outcomes of what we're talking about here. So that's kind of how I would approach that work.
All right. Thank you, Christopher. And Iho, you're our final candidate on this question.
Yes, ma'am. That's very sad to hear that, but it is a reality. I remember I took one of my very good friends to Haven. So our safety is one of our city's main functions, like other lot of functions. And this area is also one of the areas we need to continue work on. And like I mentioned before, we need a proper training of law enforcement. It is essential. So how our citizens can be protected and how can it's safe. So I will continue to do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Iho. We're going to head into allowing you 3 minutes for closing statements. But before we get there, and I'm just going to give all the candidates a chance to gather your thoughts and think on how you're going to use your final 3 minutes. And first, I want to thank you once again. I learned a lot from each of you and your responses. Thank you so much, like I said before, for being just willing to run for public office. That's not an easy thing to do these days. And you've put yourself out there as willing to serve in our community. So I appreciate that so much. I do also want to just take a moment before we head into these final questions to mention that we do have a voter guide. All the candidates responded to various questions. You can find that online. Jan had dropped that into the chat towards the beginning of our forum. I'm going to drop it in the chat again. Oh, there it is. Jan just did it again. Thank you, Jan. So you can look at that at your leisure. Also, this is being live streamed with KGVM, and there will be a podcast. It's also being recorded. So you can, if you came in late or if somebody's not here tonight because they couldn't make it, you can direct them towards that recording and they can hear the entire forum as well. Also, I want to make mention that ballots are due November 2nd. You still have until Monday to register, so please don't forget to do that. Make sure you're dropping off your ballot. And any other public announcements like that, Jan, that I missed? I think I got them all.
You are good. Thank you.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. Oh, yes. And Carson is reminding me that at this point, make sure you hand deliver your ballots rather than mail them in so that they're in on time. So at this point, make sure to drop them off instead of sticking them in the mail. All right. With that, we're going to give each candidate 3 minutes. Any closing comments, any other things that you didn't get a chance to discuss that you wanted to highlight about your experience or about issues? This is your opportunity. And we're going to start with the mayoral candidates first, which means we actually are going to hear from Terry first.
Thank you. Well, we have reached the last public forum for the campaign cycle. And I just want to thank everyone who participated and threw their name in the ring and said, I think I can lead this this community. It is a gift to the community that you have given. I respect you for doing that. And I thank you for caring about your community enough to do that. So everyone who's run for public office, I give you my sincere thanks. Each of the three mayoral candidates has had an opportunity to describe their vision. I've chosen to run a positive, optimistic campaign that focuses on collaborative solutions. I don't believe you can run for mayor without having priorities and without having a vision for the community. I do have priorities. I do have a vision for the community. I want to create a caring, connected community where families can thrive, where our workforce can afford to live, and where our connection to the outdoors is celebrated. 4 years ago, I warned that Bozeman's housing market was threatening to turn us into a bifurcated community of haves and have-nots. I've worked to generate a housing action plan that, when implemented, will hopefully stem the exodus of our workforce and young families and young folks who are graduating from MSU. I've gone above and beyond to remove barriers for specific affordable housing projects, and I've proposed a community housing levy that's predicted to leverage over $200 million in new housing and positively impact the lives of 5,000 Bozeman residents, which represents 10% of our population. I've prioritized and taken specific action to ensure the preservation of our sensitive lands and to protect them from development. That project is ongoing, and I just heard from the city manager that we have a number of engaged partners who are enthusiastic about that. I've prioritized our community's response to climate change, helping to craft the most aggressive climate plan of any city in Montana. I've prioritized equal pay and increased minimum wage and a serious review of our racial equity policies. I'm not afraid to tackle the most challenging issues we face as a community, and I've proposed that we do so in collaboration with our community partners like MSU, the school district, the county, area businesses, and nonprofits. The most crucial thing the mayor of Bozeman can provide to the community is leadership. In me, you have a proven leader with a track record of achieving results through partnership and collaboration, a leader who will lead with compassion, connection, and caring. And I thank the task force, and let's get CEDAW resolution passed.
All right, thank you very much, Terry. Appreciate you running for office. And let's go to the other mayoral candidate, Brian Lemires.
Okay, yeah, thank you all. Yeah, this was a good time. Another good campaign season coming to a close. Yeah, it was great working, getting to meet all you folks. And thanks for this opportunity tonight. And again, I'm not here because I want to be a politician. I'm here because I think our city government can be better. And that's really what I'm all about, better government. I want the government in the town where I live to be the best that it can be. And better government to me means doing a better job of listening to you, doing a better job of managing your tax money, working hard to keep your costs down so that nobody else gets taxed out of Bozeman. And all of the issues that are important to you are important to me. And there's nothing more important to me than democracy and the will of the people. And I will tackle your issues head on. And I do mean that, your issues. I mean, I have no issues. Well, that's a loaded statement. But obviously, if you ask me how I feel about certain things, I'm going to tell you how I really feel. But the most important thing to me is that democracy works. And like I alluded to earlier, the frustration that led me to run for mayor in the first place back in 2017 is because it's not because I had any particular policy to push, but it's rather that I didn't think the policies that you cared about as a Bozeman community were getting addressed the way that they should be addressed. So again, my main mission will be to fix our government so that it better represents what you want, not what I want necessarily, but what you want. And in doing that, I also promise to stand up on your behalf and to question the answers, which means I will not be a rubber stamp for City Hall, not by any stretch. And I'll add efficiency, transparency, and common sense to the process. I'll make sure that your voice is heard, make sure that you get the best bang for your buck, and make sure that you're in the driver's seat as we grow and move forward. And you can read more about me on my website, lemires.com, or feel free to give me a call. And so thank you. You know, I'll listen to you. I'll put you back in charge, and let's work on unity based on what we all have in common. And please don't forget to vote. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you also for taking the time and the commitment to run again. Thank you so much. Thank you. We're going to shift now to the four-year candidates, and we'll start with Christopher Coburn.
That's great. I just want to start by saying thank you very much to the task force for taking the time to put this together tonight, as well as for all the other groups that have done the work to put together these candidate forums. It has been such a really fun campaign in the sense that we've had some really amazing conversations, and I think we've learned and grown together as a candidate group. So I'm really grateful for all of the other candidates who have been on this journey over the past few months with me. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm running now for the same reason that I sought appointment then, which are all centered around the fact that I really care about Bozeman. And for me, that care always has and continues to present itself as working hard for Bozeman. I have a history of showing up and fighting for our community. I've been a part of some of our most needed and some of our most impactful community campaigns and projects, including the new tiny home village, the new tiny home community on the north end of town, and the reimagination, the design, and the fundraising efforts for the new Haven shelter. I've contributed to collaboratives that have elevated our conversations around and actually have improved access to behavioral health care for people in our community. I've served on the Gallatin City County Board of Health since before the start of the pandemic, and I continue to run programs to ensure that everybody has easy access to preventable health care and COVID-19 vaccines. In the 6 months that I've been one of your Bozeman City Commissioners, I've helped to shape some really important decisions. As I said earlier, I was successful in securing $500,000 to help folks who continue to be impacted by COVID-19. And I will say that I agree that we could have and we should have done more, but I was successful in getting us $500,000 to the effort. With a few other folks on this call, I helped to secure all the funding for Streamline to make sure that we could grow and develop our public transit systems when they were going to need well into the future. I've continued to elevate conversations around equity and inclusion, and I have shaped some policy decisions to make our policies more responsive to a diverse community. And I've centered affordable housing in every land use decision I've been a part of, and I've consistently advocated for the things that we all need. Over the course of this campaign and over the course of my 6 months serving as commissioner, I've demonstrated that I'm up for the task of serving you all. And I'm excited about the opportunity to keep doing it for 4 more years. Thank you all.
All right. And I also want to say thank you to you, Christopher, for taking the time to run and the effort you've been putting into your campaign. Thank you. Let's go to Iho now.
Thank you. I also like to say thank you so much for these opportunities. It has been my pleasure to get to know all the candidates. I just amazed and very impressed with all of our candidates' energy and the commitment and the passion to our community. So I just, through this campaign and the candidate forums, I just realized again and again and again, just like tonight, our future is bright. Look at the young people. Amazing. Just amazing. And it has been honor to be one of our amazing cities, city commissioners. I have learned a lot. I've been studying a lot. I have a lot of land use and how to land is the one of the most element things is affordable housing. So how we can use land wisely and thoughtfully. The land is gone, it's gone. Also, we have to preserve open spaces too. So if our community give me us opportunity again, I will continuously working very hard for making affordable housing available. It's a tremendously difficult issues, but I will continue to work hard and also keeping our Bozeman business friendly. Right now, current, we all know UDC. I'm sure Carson Taylor is especially know about this one. UDC is very, very hard to use. So continuously, we do this with UDC, easy to our users and our core. That is also related to affordable housing too. And affordable housing, preserving open spaces, wetland, is, they don't go together, but when land is gone, it's gone. So while we're doing affordable housing, we also try to save wetland and preserving open spaces. We all know our earth needs our love right now. That is a statement. And improving access to mental health support. I keep doing that. we had a, I am so thankful for May, we had a fundraiser for HRDC Blueprint, youth. It's age 16 years old to 22. I asked who are they? Majority of them as LGBTQ and family rejected and homeless. So, and also moving, implement our city's climate action plan. Our current city manager told us our current city climate action plan is one of the best action plans in the entire of America. So I will continue working on that one. So I understand the issues and there is more work to do. So thank you.
Thank you also for your service already on the commission and for running again. And let's shift over to Emily.
Okay. Thanks everybody for tuning in. And, I'm glad to see so many people in attendance because if nothing else, trying to understand what it is that a city commission does, I guess in a nutshell, it's, you vote on policy and most of that policy is where money goes. And I think, a lot of the hardships that people are experiencing here in our town, they're unintended consequences by and large of these policy decisions, but they're directly related to a status quo whereby these, policies are made and decisions are made by people who are super out of touch with the everyday lived experience of people who give this place a pulse. So we've got some acute needs here. I kind of have a two-prong approach. We have acute ones that need to be met and creatively. One of the things I've made comment before, it's like if you have an extra room in your house, if you have some space on your lot, get a hold of HRDC, get it rented. If you have space that you can have an RV on there and you can get power to somebody, get it to them. Get someone on your property now because these are acute needs. But the second approach really, we got to back up and look at the bigger picture here. We have had this narrative in this city of attracting, higher taxable values. We've marketed the place, for skiing and fishing and hiking and all these things. And those are amenities and people have to provide those amenities. And so the second approach is really, we have to bring a narrative shift to the commission. And that's something that Evan and I spend a ton of time on, discussing this idea that, and he's enlightened me. I mean, he leans left, I lean right, but we both just want to make this a better place. And by shifting that narrative back to people as opposed to amenities, narratives lead to assumptions. We know that. And assumptions lead to ultimately to how we treat one another and what we do. So tempering expectations, there are some things that commissioners have control over and that they don't. There's other laws in place. But I think giving you that transparency to understand why community to be creative at meeting their own needs. Emma and I are running. We are total neophytes to the political scene. We didn't know, fundraising, things like that. But we're running because we believe things that can change first and foremost. And you have to believe that it can in order to do it. But we're ready to get to work for you guys. So thanks.
And I also want to thank you, Emily. I know what it's like to break into a new seed and run for the first time. So thank you for being willing to do that. And we're going to go to Jen Magic next.
Thank you. Boy, I don't know about anyone else, but this whole process, both of running and serving as city commissioner, is so humbling. I feel incredibly humbled by these forums, by the other candidates, by what I've learned both about myself and about our great community. It's
it's encouraging and it gives me hope and optimism. So I just wanted to say that. I wanted to thank too the task force. Thanks so much to Carson, Jan, Liana for all the work that you have put into this. This helps people make decisions on voting, but it also, I think, helps educate folks about our community and different issues and different solutions to the problems out there. And so there is value in that. And I think we've seen that value in every single forum we've had, because all the forums have been different with different audiences and different sponsoring groups. So I'm really proud to be what I consider a progressive member of the Bozeman City Commission. I'm a planner, a community planner, and I believe in conservation-oriented planning strategies. And I believe that by doing that, we can build a healthy community and healthy neighborhoods. And that is something that needs to be addressed in a very comprehensive fashion. You can't just look at building a neighborhood, the built environment, and call it good. You've got to look at the social aspects. You've got to look at things that everything, once again, that we've been talking about tonight, and make sure that the community is whole. Because when you have something that is not working, like childcare or police brutality or, you know, whatever it happens to be, the community suffers and drops down. So just want to say thank you. You know, thanks to all my fellow candidates. I'm proud to be part of this group. It's kind of sad that this is the last forum, because I've really enjoyed working with all of you. I'm kind of lying because I feel like I'm a horse headed for the barn. I'm almost done. I had a horse like that once, so I can relate. So thanks. Thanks to everyone. That's all I have to say.
All right. Jen, I also want to thank you for being willing to run. I hear all of that, understand what it takes to be a candidate. So thank you, Jen. And this means we're at our final candidate, which is Joey Morrison.
So nervous to have the last word. Thank you, Leanna and Carson and Jan and Ellie for bringing us together and facilitating this with us tonight into the task force at large. And thanks for having another forum where we've got the mayoral candidates back with us. We didn't have them last week. A vote for me is really a commitment to putting your voice and your vote behind someone who has already demonstrated love and service to this community. Since I first got to this community, I have since then given thousands of hours already as a crisis worker, as a domestic violence advocate, as a survivor advocate for survivors of sexual assault. I already have these convictions. I have lived these every day that I've been here in this community and will continue to do those, live those values, win or lose. I've always endeavored to be chronically aspirational and fiercely pragmatic. I want to be focused firmly on the way things should be, not just the way things are. And for a moment, I want to zoom us out to what we're experiencing at beyond just the city of Bozeman and look at the country and the world. We are experiencing two immense existential threats to the future livability of our world: the growing income gap between the rich and the poor, and climate disaster. I firmly believe, and we've been seeing demonstrable change come from this investment, but I really believe, there's evidence to support this, that we cannot possibly hope to solve these problems without concerted effort at the federal level, at the global level, at the state level, at the local level. We know we need to invest in people who live climate dread, who live income dread every day, who can't turn away from these problems, in order to best solve those problems. We know that to be evident and true. Those are perspectives that we need to be championing here in this community, people who live this every day, people who think about these problems every day, and can recognize the nuanced and complex ways in which it invokes conviction in those of us who are fighting for it, in recognizing that these problems are compounded for every marginalized identity that somebody holds. We know that those are central to being the guiding principles in which we as a community can make this one that's a leader in how we tackle climate change, a leader in how we make an equitable community, and a leader in how we say the way we have been doing housing hasn't worked and we need to make that change happen. I'm running because I understand that change can happen, that there's better that's possible, and that we deserve it. And I'm here to fight alongside whoever gets elected here or in the streets with my fellow organizers to let people know that these are the things that we deserve as human beings and to lead that change in this community here. And that is why I'm running.
All right. And I also want to thank you, Joey, for being a new candidate and taking the time and the courage to run for our community. And what I want to say in closing is it's actually very inspiring to see all the people here who just care about our community. Wherever this lands, all the different things that you represent, I feel like Bozeman is in good hands, and I'll be excited to see what the outcome of this election will be. So thank you so much for participating and being a part of it. You can look for the podcast and the recording of this, and it was live streamed on KGVM, and I believe they'll have that recording as well. Jan or Carson, anything else for the good of the order?
Just appreciation to all that participated as candidates and the folks that are both here with us after a lot of months of these forums, and also people listening. So we're really thrilled to offer it to you wherever you are. Thanks to my teammates. Really always a pleasure.
Thank you all for your thoughtful comments. I think this has helped us all make the hard decisions we have to make as to who to vote for.
And thank you, Ellie, for your diligence and precision and timing. Appreciate you. All right. Well, this concludes our forum. Don't forget November 2nd. And you can still register if you need to register. We'll see you when we get our results. Thank you, everybody.